Having a bake sale, building a shed in your own backyard, pumping gas, getting a vasectomy, owning a car, driving someone else's car, riding in a car, disposing of batteries, cutting hair for a living, having a controlled bonfire on your own property, owning a dog, walking a dog, selling a mattress, watching a DVD, holding any sort of public performance, importing foreign cheese, changing your last name to your spouse's, buying fireworks, riding a bicycle, having a swimming pool, Xeroxing and distributing copyrighted material, transporting a bottle of opened wine home from a restaurant, using a skateboard, buying unpasteurized milk, recycling. This list, compiled by Sarah Hutto for an article in McSweeney's, is made up of things that are more regulated than owning a gun in America. There are more rules around simple, basic safety about pretty much everything else we do. And here's one reason why. The Center for Disease Control, the CDC, is not allowed to study gun violence. This organization, whose mission it is to study public health so that we can have more safety and health for all of our people, is restricted by law from studying gun violence. Their studies have been what leads to the regulations on many of the things I just listed. Their studies are why we have seatbelts and cosmetology licenses and health departments and bike helmets and laws requiring that we have these safety measures in place in order to do the things we wish to do. Without these studies, it's hard to get very far with proposing what might help to keep us safe. In 2015, the American Association for the Advancement of Science called for an end to congressional restrictions on gun research at the CDC, stating that if the government could collect detailed data on gun violence, researchers might see patterns and come up with interventions that could reduce the number of deaths. Still, nothing has been done. And we continue to have a lack of research into the gun epidemic. And the reason the CDC cannot study guns? Well, this brings us to a larger issue. The NRA, the National Rifle Association, are really, really good storytellers. They've told a story, one that has become deeply entrenched in the hearts and minds of many Americans, and they've paid politicians to help tell the story and protect it so that their profits can continue to rise. One piece of the story they tell so well is that regulations mean the loss of basic freedoms for gun owners, that regulations will lead straight to tyranny. Let's look at just that piece of the story for a minute. In 1997, after a major mass shooting in Australia, the country enacted strict gun laws, very strict by our standards here. Peter, an Australian gun enthusiast who declined to give his last name for fear that his vast collection might be in danger, wrote the following in a Time magazine article. "People who love to shoot in Australia look at the situation in America with dismay. We all want to be able to continue our sport. All these mass killings are giving it a bad name. It's making everybody fear people like me where they should have no fear. One big difference is that in Australia we think owning a gun is a privilege, and in America people think of it as a right. When the Prime Minister John Howard proposed the gun law, I marched like everybody else did in opposition to it, but I now fully endorse what he did. I didn't like handing over my rifles, but at the end of the day, it's a small price to pay not to have, and these are his words, not mine, the nut jobs walking around shopping centers and massacring innocent people. He continues, Australia is a great country. You can go hunting, you can go shooting, and as long as you hurt no one and abide the law, you can continue. That to me is freedom. The idea of having people own guns with no concept of gun safety and no reason to have a gun, that's not my idea of freedom. Now, the rifles he references having to give back were semi-automatic. All semi-automatic weapons are banned for civilians in Australia, so the government bought them all back and paid people fair value for them. And Peter holds licenses for every other weapon he owns. He has to have quite a few licenses for each of the different kinds. And he writes that it's a bit annoying to have to wait 30 days, for that's how long their cooling off period is. He's a bit annoyed when he has to wait that long when he wants to buy a new rifle, even though he already has 15 of them. But he understands the reason behind it, so he feels like it's okay. He weighs the needs of the whole against his own desires and is willing to make a small personal sacrifice for the safety of us all. The country of Australia has not had a single mass shooting since enacting these laws. Not a single mass shooting. Let that idea sink in for a moment. Can you imagine the end of mass shootings? Gun deaths across the board have also decreased in Australia, both homicides and suicides. The gun control laws in Australia have clearly shown what could be possible if we were to change the American relationship to guns. This week, after a human being killed 58 other human beings and injured, 59, I'm sorry, I wrote this yesterday, and then I found out that it was 59. After a human being killed 59 other human beings and injured more, hundreds more, in the matter of minutes, comedian and TV host Trevor Noah said this, "I'm sorry that we live in a world where there are people who will put a gun before your lives. This is a fundamental issue for us in this country. We have to understand that the lives of our siblings, the lives of our neighbors, the lives of other human beings are more important than one small personal freedom. Keeping one another safe is more important than maintaining a collection of items designed to hurt other people." Let's return to one more thing we heard from Peter, though, because it is a central difference in ideology around guns here and guns in Australia. Most gun owners here in the United States state that the main reason they own them is to protect themselves. And this is a new development. In 1999, Pew Research showed that the main reason people owned guns was to hunt. In 2013, protection rose into the top spot. So as mass shootings became more common, as people had more fear of being hurt randomly by another person, some of us decided that the answer was less guns, while others decided that the answer was more. Even as the rate of violent crimes has steadily decreased since the mid-90s, the fear has increased as the rate and severity of mass shootings has increased. In about half of the country, guns have become easier to legally buy and carry since the rise of mass shootings in the 90s. And this brings us to another story that lives in America around guns, another story that the NRA has told quite well. It's a story I think you've heard, that the answer to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. You're familiar with this story? The phrase originated with the NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre following the Sandy Hook shooting in 2012. And it has taken hold big time. Firearm sales increase drastically after each mass shooting incident. People are scared, so they go out and buy more guns. After Sandy Hook, for example, NRA profits increased by over $100 million. Membership increased by hundreds of thousands of people, and firearms sales soared. At the same time, crime rates have not decreased in the states that have concealed carry laws. In fact, the states that have concealed carry laws actually have higher rates of some violent crimes. And shootings in which others on scene have had weapons have merely been more difficult to end because it is harder for law enforcement to determine who is trying to shoot people and who is trying to end the shooting by shooting. Even without CDC studies, the myth of the good guy with the gun does not seem to hold statistically from what we have. And we cannot ignore what happened in Australia. Gun-related crimes went down and mass shooting ended. At the end of the day, statistics and arguments aside, we come back to scared people searching for a way forward. The domestic terrorists who have carried out these mass shootings have succeeded in their number one goal of creating terror. But let's be really clear. These terrorists were white. And somehow, that means we are less willing to give up our rights in order to create a more safe environment for all. Let's remember that when brown-skinned terrorists have attacked the United States, we have been willing to enact some of the most freedom-reducing laws imaginable, including phone taps, talking about walls, torturing our prisoners. And it all seemed justifiable to most of America when there were brown-skinned terrorists targeting us from overseas and from within our borders. But as this epidemic of mass shootings perpetuated by white men grows and grows, what are we doing about it? On Monday night, comedian and late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel put it this way. We'll pray for Las Vegas. Bills will be written. They'll be watered down. They'll fail. The NRA will smother it all with money, and over time we'll get distracted, and we'll move on to the next thing. And then it will happen again. And again. Our stories are deeply entrenched, and we need to find a way to reframe them. People are scared, and they have reason to be. This is a scary place to be right now. It's terrifying to think that our children have to have active shooter drills in their schools. It's heartbreaking that our siblings could be killed so quickly in such large numbers. So yes, I could go on and on about the answer being gun control laws, but you know it's not that simple, right? Another answer is also that we need to offer better mental health care for all people, all the time, regardless of their income. And another answer is also that we need to address people's fears in a variety of ways, but in part through just being with them in their fears and lovingly educating them around what safety might look like. And the answer is also that we need to create more places where people can find real connection to one another and even more places where people can talk to people who see things differently than they do. Really talk about their fears and their hopes. And a big answer is we have to find a way to remove the ways in which lobbyists like the NRA have such incredible control over our political system. And at the end of it all, we come back to this. There's a sickness in our culture that is leading some of us to choose to kill others of us in large numbers more and more frequently. I don't know why they are doing it. But I know that the regularity and increased severity of it implicates us all. There's something broken at the heart of our culture. Something evil, perhaps. Something terribly wrong. It's up to us, people of faith, to voice what is good and what is right. To continue to lift up that each and every one of us is capable of incredible good. That each and every one of us makes the choice to do good each and every day. And that given the right circumstances, we might just as easily choose to do something terrible. And we must continue to raise our voices in opposition to the othering of all people, to the dehumanization of people, to all the ways in which we are complicit in creating a culture that creates division, that creates people who value others' lives so little. We must create a culture where everyone values the lives of their neighbors more than they value any of their possessions. We must create and foster a culture where human life is more sacred than any words written at any time, be they part of our Constitution or not. We have to do it together. And we have to get to work right now.